measures to take away our plans to introduce tax cuts, lift limits on cash transactions, taxing the excess profits of the energy giants in a windfall tax, and reallocating some of the EU pandemic recovery funds.
Ma la nostra priorità...
Our priority today must be to curb high energy prices and accelerate in every way the diversification of supply sources and domestic production. The context in which the government will have to act is very complicated, perhaps the most difficult since the World War II.
Also on Wednesday, Meloni went on saying that Italy will remain an active member of the EU on her watch and that it would continue to be a reliable partner of NATO in supporting Ukraine. Italy's new prime minister said that the only way to facilitate a peace deal between Russia and Ukraine is helping Kyiv to defend itself militarily. Meloni's two main allies, media magnate Silvio Berlusconi and League leader Matteo Salvini, are longtime admirers of Russian President Vladimir Putin. U.S. Embassy Chargé d'Affaires attended in person the confidence vote on Giorgia Meloni's new government at the Chamber of Deputies on Tuesday. Some fear Meloni could embark on a course of confrontation towards the Western alliance. Back in 2016, Meloni defined the European Union as rotten to its core, while in 2014, Italy's new prime minister staunchly opposed sanctions against Russia after its annexation of Crimea.
Yemen's Ansar Allah movement is doubling down on its threats to target foreign cargo ships attempting to enter Yemeni waters illegally to steal oil and other natural resources. This after the government recently fired warning shots toward a Greek oil ship attempting to illegally load an estimated 2 million barrels of Yemeni oil from a port terminal in the province of Hadramaut. The warning shots forced the Greek cargo ship to abandon its mission and use its own fuel to head back home empty-handed.
This fuel ship was attempting to steal 2 million barrels of Yemeni oil worth millions of dollars. This money is supposed to be allocated to the Central Bank of Yemen, which would then be distributed to pay labor salaries across the country. Unfortunately, this money was transferred to a bank belonging to the Saudi royal family and was used to fund the American-Saudi aggression on Yemen.
According to the government in Sana'a, ending years of plundering and looting of the Yemeni natural wealth is essential to stimulate the Yemeni economy. It also pulls Yemen out of the decades of poverty and economic instability, which has already left millions of Yemenis in poverty. An initiative, the Sana'a government says, is promising to make it a reality. Observers believe that the world now needs to recognize that it is dealing with a new Yemeni nation, one that will never compromise its dignity and sovereignty.
The new identity of Yemen is because people's demands are now being met, whereby the Yemeni people are finally getting what they deserve as they reap the benefit of their natural resources, which used to be exploited and plundered. The latest warning shots we sent are an example of the military and political leadership's strengths, pose, and determination to protect the people of Yemen.
Yemen has for decades been described as the poorest country in the Middle East. However, the underlying reasons why that is the case are hardly ever discussed. According to experts we spoke with, one of the main reasons is the systematic exploitation of Yemen's natural wealth by the UAE and Saudi Arabia.
With the latest developments, foreign countries and companies who have a history in plundering Yemen's natural resources will have to think twice about entering the country's waters illegally, as the Ansar Allah movement has made it very clear it will not hesitate to use decisive military force to protect what it calls the Yemeni people's wealth. Yusuf Mawadi, Sana'a.
During his first speech as British Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak used the occasion to issue a call for unity. Sunak must find a way to quickly unite not just a bitterly divided Conservative Party, but also a deeply troubled nation. However, he also issued warnings of difficult times ahead.
I will place economic stability and confidence at the heart of this government's agenda. This will mean difficult decisions to come.
The Prime Minister has inherited a country in crisis. Energy prices are high cost of living through the roof, and millions of Brits are expected to struggle this winter. Another worry for Sunak, Conservative Party popularity has plummeted in recent months, sitting approximately 30 points behind the opposition Labour Party. Sunak's supporters say he's economically experienced from his days as Chancellor and praised Sunak as Britain's youngest leader in 200 years and the first ever non-white leader. But his critics claim that's just not enough.
He definitely has the credentials. He definitely has the experience, been there in the as Chancellor before. But again, we need to understand, you know, where does he sit right here, right now, with everyday voters? He has not been elected by the people, as well as he. Most people feel that he cannot resonate with the ones that are struggling. I'm not sure if it is real representation for anyone of a minority background, especially when he comes from a very, very elitist club, and he does not really represent many. He's probably top 1% of majority of brown people or Asians, whatever you want to call it, in the entire world. So it's very difficult to sort of resonate and feel sort of close in that way.
Many challenges lie ahead for the new Prime Minister, in particular how he's going to overcome Britain's many economic crises. However, even if he does find a way to overcome Britain's economic woes, question marks still remain surrounding if he has what it takes to win the Conservatives the next general election. Robert Carter, London.
NGC 23 is a remote galaxy which is more than 200 million light-years away from Earth. What's even more interesting is that the interstellar object was observed by none of the celebrity telescopes like James Webb, but by a new indigenous Iranian observatory called INO, short for Iranian National Observatory, marking a milestone in the country's quest for deep space.
Within 3 weeks ago, which we got the first light, the so-called first light, we had no idea about the quality of the image we are going to get, and it was excellent.
Another debut image shot by the 3.4-meter optical telescope is ARP-282, an interacting galaxy pair located approximately 320 million light-years away. Scientists at the Iranian National Observatory say their telescope could see objects as far as 7 billion light-years away.
Of course, we can use this telescope to observe even deeper objects, but the highest quality of this telescope can be achieved up to 7 billion light years away from us.
INO is built on Mount Gargash, north of the city of Isfahan, at a height of 3,600 meters above sea level. The project was initiated about 15 years ago, aiming at the development of a medium-class telescope to provide a research facility for national users.
In the next coming months, and especially in the next year, the telescope will be delivered to the astronomers as the end user of this expensive and complex instrument.
Constructing INO was the result of complicated scientific and technological efforts, but there was even a tougher challenge, U.S. sanctions. The anti-Iran measures block high-tech imports and access to foreign know-how. The Iranian team purchased the glass mirror blanks from a German firm, but then had to figure out how to construct nearly everything else on their own.
Due to U.S. sanctions and some financial problems, they cut their relation with us, and we did the rest of project within last 12 years by ourselves.
INO is still not fully developed. Engineers need to integrate software, fine-tune the active optics, and install the first science instrument, a high-resolution imaging camera. Once completed, the telescope will help scientists understand galaxy formation and stellar evolution and hunt for exoplanets.
With INO, Iran has marked its first giant leap in space exploration and has fairly entered the world space race. The telescope's builders are now thrilled to announce that they will soon release more stunning images of deep space, hoping to help the world catch a glimpse of the wonders of our universe. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Thousands
Thousands of mourners took to the streets of Nablus in the occupied West Bank to bid farewell to Palestinians killed by Israeli forces. Early Tuesday, clashes broke out between Palestinian fighters and Israeli forces after regime forces conducted a raid in Nablus. Several Palestinians were killed in the raid. Among the victims was Wadi Hawah, a fighter for the newly formed resistance group Lion's Den. 21 other Palestinians were also wounded in the attack, some of them in critical condition.
Those Palestinian young men will not be defeated by the Israeli war machinery. The Israeli occupation will pay a high price for its crimes. The response will be in the field. The flag of Wadi Hawa and other martyrs will continue flying every day, and more Palestinian heroes will be born.
The Israeli army said it had carried out a vast operation with police and intelligence officers targeting a site used by the main operatives of the Lion's Den, describing it as a headquarters and a workshop for making weapons. Later on Tuesday, regime forces conducted another attack near Ramallah and killed one more Palestinian man. 19-year-old Qusay At-Tamimi was killed during a confrontation in the village of Nabi Saleh. Palestinian officials have condemned the raids as vicious and criminal, but they said such attacks will not break the will of the Palestinian people, who are adherent to resistance as their legitimate right.
Their attacks on Palestinians in Nablus and in Ramallah and in other places will not break the Palestinian will. It will not stop the Palestinian resistance. The Palestinians have understood very clearly that Israel understands only the language of force, and that's why they are ready to defend themselves and defend their rights.
All the Palestinians are in the same tunnel, facing the same atrocities, while the same war crimes are being committed all over the Palestinian territories. The Palestinians are unified through different forms of resistance.
Since the beginning of this year, over 130 Palestinians have been killed in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds.
The Israeli regime threatens to continue killing Palestinian resistance fighters under the pretext of battling terrorism. Palestinians, however, say they will remain steadfast in their resolve, stressing that the Israeli atrocities will not stop their resistance. Mona Qandil, occupied Ramallah.
This is IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
the supplication on Sundays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. In the name of Allah, from whom I hope for nothing but bounty, and from whom I fear nothing but justice. I rely only upon His word, and I cling only to His cord. In Thee I seek sanctuary, O possessor of pardon and good pleasure. From wrong and enmity, and from the changes of time, and the recurrence of sorrows, and from the striking of mishaps, and from the expiration of my term before preparation and readiness. From Thee I seek guidance to that wherein is righteousness and being set right. From Thee I seek help in that which is linked to success and favorable response. Thee I beseech for the garment of well-being and its completion, and for the covering of health and its permanence. I seek refuge in Thee, my Lord, from the goadings of the Satans, and I seek protection in Thy sovereignty from the injustice of the sovereigns. So accept my past prayers and fasting, and make my tomorrow and what is after better than my present hour and my today. And exalt me in my clan and my people, and protect me in my waking and my sleeping. For Thou art Allah, the best guardian, and Thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, I am quit before Thee on this day of mine and on all Sundays that follow it of associating others with Thee and of heresy. And I devote my supplication sincerely to Thee, addressing myself to Thy response. And I observe the acts of obedience to You for the hope of Your rewards. So bless Muhammad, the best of Thy creation, the summoner to Thy truth. Exalt me with Thy exaltation, which is never made to suffer loss. And protect me with Thy eye, which never sleeps. And seal my affair by cutting me off from everything but Thee and my life with forgiveness. Surely Thou art the All-Forgiving, the All-Compassionate.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome to Spotlight. On Wednesday, a terror attack on a holy shrine in the Iranian city of Shiraz left over a dozen people dead. The Daesh terrorist group claimed responsibility, and on Friday, Iranians from all walks of life held rallies to condemn the attack. In this edition of Spotlight, we'll discuss the different aspects of this terrorist attack that happened amid the riots that have recently engulfed the country. But first, let's watch this report.
Iranians have held nationwide rallies to condemn the Wednesday terrorist attack in the southern city of Shiraz. The protesters took to the streets in different cities following Friday prayers. They chanted slogans and held banners, calling for the perpetrators and their backers to be brought to justice.
Today we're here to show the world that we are all together.
We are a powerful country. We're going to fight against terrorism. We're going to fight against violence. You want us to be separated. You want us to fight against each other, but we are the one. We are powerful.
At least 13 people, including two children, were killed after gunmen opened fire on pilgrims at the Shah Jarrah Holy Shrine in Shiraz. 26 others were wounded. The Daesh terror group claimed responsibility shortly after the attack.
We strongly condemn any acts of terrorism and desecration of Muslim sanctities. We want to say that we hate London-based news channels like Iran International, Manoto, and BBC because they are instigating violence and unrest in Iran.
We are here to send this message to Israel, the U.S., and their allies that through creating riots and unrest in the country, they cannot achieve their sinister goal of disintegration of Iran. We are united.
Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has called on security agencies, the judiciary, intellectuals, activists, and the entire nation to act in unison to confront the current which is disregarding and disrespecting people's lives, security, and sanctities. Meanwhile, Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi has also vowed that the Islamic Republic would deliver a crushing response to those who were behind the bloodshed.
The ralliers have called on Iranian authorities to prosecute the main perpetrators of the heinous crime of terrorist attack in Shiraz and take all necessary measures to maintain security in the country as soon as possible. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, joining us on Spotlight, we have journalist and political analyst Elijah Magnier joining us from Brussels. And from London, journalist and political commentator Hafsa Kara Mustafa. Welcome to the program, to the both of you. Let's start off with Mr. Magnier in Brussels. I want to get your perspective on the recent terrorist attack at the Holy Shrine in Shiraz and also how you perceive the message of today's rallies.
Thank you for having me. In every act of terrorism or every crime, the first question is cui bono, so who benefit from the act of terrorism or from the crime? Now, we've been following ISIS since a very long time in Iraq and in Syria and in Lebanon, and we understand that this group has been almost defeated because you can't end the ideology of Takfiri Wahhabism, but you can put an end to the strength and the power of the group. Therefore, we see in the terrorist attack in Shiraz, there is no benefit really for ISIS to go and attack a place worshipped by the population and to get a slim result of 15 killed just for people to talk about ISIS that is almost dead. So we understand that is a clear message to Iran for several reasons. First, because the JCPOA is frozen. Second, because there are many news that Iran is supporting Russia and the war in Ukraine, and its drones are highly damaging to the objective of the U.S. to defeat Russia. And third, because the Iranians are not willing to submit to the U.S. will to sign a quick deal and to make available the energy that Iran has in gas and oil, to the most needed European and American market. So inevitably, we understand also that the Israelis and the CIA have been very active in Iran by acts of sabotage and assassination of nuclear scientists, the sabotage on nuclear location and in other locations belonging to the Iranian government. And the last point is it comes in a time where there are riots in Iran caused by always the same objective to change the regime. So all this combination, we understand that this terrorist attack falls into the same bouquet that the West is trying to promote unrest in Iran to defeat the economy that is trying to pick up regardless the endless and the thousands of sanctions, and also to put in doubt the security in Iran. That is the main message that we understand from this terrorist attack.
Hafsakara Mustafa, what do you think was the purpose of the attack at this point in time, and why was a holy shrine the target of such an attack?
It's not remotely surprising because, of course, this is a target of a Sunni extremist group targeting a place that is sacred to Shia. So it's very much in line with what the kind of ISIS objective would be in any situation at any other time. But I think at this particular moment, it's a way of trying to hit Iran when it is perceived that Iran is weakened by these riots that are continuing and that are being fueled, obviously, by exterior forces. So it's a way of adding an extra layer of attacks on Iran at a time where it needs to come together and actually resist any form of external pressure. And so ISIS, as has been the case since it came into being, whether it being in Syria or in Iraq, every time a country comes together in order to fight external forces, ISIS comes in and does the dirty work for the imperialist powers. So this particular moment in time is not remotely surprising. And I would, of course, agree completely with my fellow panelists saying that it's a time when Russia and Iran are collaborating together and showing a stronger front against this sort of coalition of Western powers that are looking to weaken Iran, but Iran simply isn't signing up to this and continues to do business, refusing to submit to the pressures of Western governments, and has shown that it's still staying strong. And so we're probably going to see further attacks similar to these, I'm afraid to say, in order to show that Iran is going to be attacked over and over again until it accepts. But I think, as we've seen in the past, although they have tried it with ISIS, whether in Syria or in Iraq, I'm not sure it's going to work nevertheless.
I'm going to stay with you, Ms. Kara Mustafa. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, spoke about the Shiraz attack, calling for unity among the nation and also for efforts to dig deep into the origins of such crimes. Can you walk us through his recent comments, please?
And this makes absolute sense because, as I said, this is a moment where Iran is being targeted from various places, and I think it's very important for the people of Iran to come together and fully realize that these attacks and these attempts to weaken Iran, whether through terrorist attacks or whether in fueling these unnecessary riots that are absolutely benefiting no one. I mean, it's one thing to make a political point and to attempt to force new change. That's a legitimate form there are legitimate forms of protest, but what is happening now are riots that are bringing that are weakening the country, that are also diverting police forces away from where it is needed, such as attacks that we've seen in Shiraz. And therefore, the Supreme Leader is right. The Iranian people really need to come together at this point and actually put aside all their political differences in order to push away all these external forces that are targeting the regime, but actually, in effect, they will be targeting and weakening the entire nation of Iran, and all people will suffer, irrespective of their political colors.
Mr. Magni, do you agree with our guest in London? On that note, the Iranian President, Ebrahim Raisi, said the recent events in Iran had paved the way for this attack on the Shah Cheragh Shrine in Shiraz to happen. What's your take on that?
I do agree with what President Raisi said, because the riots in Iran that have been supported largely by mainstream media is giving the false impression that the whole of Iran is moving against the institution, which is not right. So this movement is giving away the possibility of other acts of sabotage and terrorism. It is not, again, between Shia and Sunni like they tried to portray it by ISIS claiming its responsibility, because this card has been used and overused in Iraq and didn't work, and in Syria and even there it didn't work, and in Lebanon and it has failed, and now in Iran, and it will not succeed. So saying that this is the act of foreign forces is because the presence in the street and the riots to destroy institutions, to burn ambulances, and to create havoc in the country, giving the image that Iran, there is no stability and security in Iran, helps for more acts of sabotage and more attacks, inevitably, because Iran refused to be submitted to the United States will and to the dictate of the American dominance, particularly in the Middle East. As your guest rightly said, which I fully agree, we're going to see more of that in the future.
Miskar Mustafa, Iran says that it's in possession of, quote, irrefutable documents proving that the U.S. was the chief architect of the recent riots in the country. Now, in a joint statement that was issued earlier, Iran's intelligence ministry and the IRGC also said that some foreign spy agencies, namely the Israelis and the Saudis, were involved as well. What are the motives of such efforts?
Well, again, I mean, it's to weaken Iran at a time when Iran's resources are badly needed and when it's necessary. I mean, Iran has been a target by Western forces since the 1979 revolution. Sorry, so there's nothing surprising in that. And we see these sort of riots erupting and Western media supporting any form of rioting almost every other year now. So there's nothing new. But I think in this particular instance, in the climate of the war between Russia and Ukraine, I think it's particularly sensitive because the cost of living crisis in Europe is starting to bite. You know, energy prices are very expensive. And so Western economies are desperate to find cheaper energy. And the best way to find cheaper energy is to make sure that the country that produces these resources are actually weakened so that they don't have a greater say on the negotiating table. The weaker they are, the better, and they're more pliant they will be, and they're more likely to accept the conditions imposed on them by the buyer as opposed to them being the seller. So this is very a straightforward logic of imperialist politics towards Iran. It has been the same for 40 years, but it seems to be now even more pressing, given that Iran produces not only oil, but especially gas at a time where gas is very, very precious. And I think this is a way of putting pressure on Iran for it to sell at the conditions that are advantageous to the buyers now.
Mr. Magnier, the recent statement by Iran alludes to evidence showing the U.S. having an active role in orchestrating riots in Iran. It said the ultimate aim of the plot was to, quote, commit crimes against the Iranian nation, violate Iran's territorial integrity, and pave the ground for further foreign pressure against the country. What is to be achieved through such measures? What are the perpetrators aiming for?
Well, the first sanctions were imposed by President Jimmy Carter in 1979, and since we've seen how every single U.S. president imposed further sanctions on Iran. And if we look at what President Donald Trump, we've got the answer to your question, is to impose maximum pressure on Iran for Iran to accept the conditions imposed by the United States. And the deal was signed, the U.S. president rejected it in 2018, violating international laws. And the Americans don't care. They just want the Iranian to offer, first, no more threat to Israel, second, to pull out the support to the oppressed population around the world, particularly in Lebanon, in Syria, in Iraq, in Venezuela, in Yemen, And they want Iran to be completely passive, and then they are ready to deal with the Iranian government, whoever is in control. So this is the request of Iran to submit to what the Americans want. This is why this is going to happen and happen again. And this is what the Americans want from the Iranian. Submit, and then you can live. However, we see all these thousands of sanctions imposed on the Iranians. They have the objective to push the population to rise against their leaders. They are sanctions that cause the suffering of the Iranian people more than the Iranian leaders. And this is where the American sanctions always hit, and hit hard. But so far, Iran has managed to reject that and to stand against it and to make sure that this is not really crippling its economy. And it has been managing so far. This is upsetting the Americans, who would like to see Iran on its knee, would like to see no collaboration with the Russian, would like to see a cut of Iranian relationship with Syria, Lebanon, Iraq, and Yemen, and certainly Venezuela in the American backyard. But it's not going to happen. Iran continuing its policy, and the Americans will try more sabotage on Iranian territory.
Miskara Mustafa, the an analyst that we spoke to earlier here on Press TV, believes that such meddlesome U.S. policies will once again fail in Iran. Do you see it in that light as well?
Yes, but I mean, I'm slightly pessimistic in that it's going to succeed to some extent before it inevitably fails. They're going to continue to apply pressure. They're going to continue to cause unrest and problems for Iran, sadly. And as my fellow panelists said, in effect, impacting far more the people of Iran more than the leaderships. But I think on the long run, it will inevitably fail, as it always has. I mean, it's failed for the past 40 years. And their policies in general, in fact, have failed pretty much everywhere. There is nothing to have benefited from any of the Middle Eastern policies that they've applied anywhere in the region or beyond. I mean, we've seen them last year leaving with their tails between their legs from Afghanistan, despite an extraordinarily superior military force. So we know that the long-term policies of America never succeed, but sadly, in the short term, they do impact greatly the population. And I think this is why perhaps the Supreme Leader's words are very important and need to be echoed to the people who are currently rioting, which is to say that actually, if you're rioting, you're not really benefiting your country. You're essentially benefiting those who want to weaken your country.
Elijah Magnier, what are the broader repercussions of instability and insecurity in Iran for the region and probably for beyond that?
They are huge, because Iran has been supporting Syria from preventing it from becoming a failed state. They've been supporting Iraq. We remember since 2014, General Qasem Soleimani prevented Iraq from falling when the Americans didn't do anything. And we see also the support of Iran in Yemen by preventing the fall of Yemen in the hand of the Israelis and Bab al-Mandeb, that is a very important maritime crossing under the full control of the Americans, and the fall of the population under the control of the Saudis that have been waging a destructive war on the Yemeni. So we see that the countries in the Middle East will be without a very important supporter that is creating a balance between the dozens of the U.S. military bases in the Middle East and West Asia, and the power of Iran that has been growing in the last decades to the point that it has today a drone and missile and can defend itself, and also can transmit the support to other population, particularly in Palestine, where people, the Palestinian people, have realized that they're still holding to their cause, because all the other countries in the Middle East gave up on them, most of them, but not all, but most of them. And Iran continued to support the Palestinian cause and transfer the experience and the military experience to them, and the technology they need to continue their struggle to recover their territory. So the fall of Iran, of seeing Iran under stress and more or less prevented from keeping this balance is going to be devastating for the Middle East.
And one last question before we wrap up the program, Ms. Kara Mustafa, very briefly, if you may. This terrorist attack on the Iranian shrine has drawn widespread international condemnation, but there was a delayed and even muted reaction by some Western nations. How do you assess that?
Again, it's the infamous double standards whereby it's almost a proof that they've approved these attacks, because, of course, normally and under any circumstance and irrespective of the government, whether you're friendly or not, normally governments do always condemn an act of terror that targets civilians. And the delayed reaction almost confirms that, A, they almost approve it, and, B, they could almost be accused of somehow being associated with it. I mean, normally terrorism targeting civilians is condemned irrespectively. And yet here, as you say, the muted response is very alarming and probably shows that there is some sort of, at the very least, approval of this criminal action.
Very well. Thanks to my guest, journalist and political analyst Elijah Magnia, joining us from Brussels, and journalist and political commentator Ms. Hafsa Kara Mustafa, joining us from the British capital, London. Good night for now.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The Limelight.
Recently, French President Emmanuel Macron has expressed his dissatisfaction with the US on multiple occasions. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of Global Times wrote, Earlier this month, Macron criticized the U.S. for selling energy and gas to Europe at four times the price the U.S. sells to its own industry. Macron said, "That is not exactly the meaning of friendship." He then reminded U.S. President Joe Biden to speak with prudence when commenting on the risk of nuclear conflict. During a press conference following the just-concluded EU summit in Brussels, Macron again called out U.S. double standards over selling gas to Europe at prices 3 to 4 times higher than it is sold in U.S. domestic markets. TFI Global, an India-based media outlet, published an article on October 18th entitled, "Forget U.S.-Russia, a Cold War is underway between France and the U.S." While the West is trying hard to portray its unity amid the Russia-Ukraine crisis, France is apparently not safeguarding the U.S. prestige. This exposes deep contradictions in the transatlantic relationship. On the one hand, the practical interests of Europe and the U.S. are in growing conflict. Due to the Russia-Ukraine crisis, global energy prices are rising sharply. Costly energy imports have pushed the Eurozone into a growing trade deficit. Worse, the U.S. Federal Reserve continues to raise interest rates, bringing huge pressure to the European Central Bank when it comes to policy adjustment. The euro has fallen below parity with the dollar, dividing to its lowest level in 20 years and ending a 1-to-1 exchange rate with the U.S. currency. On the other hand, the strategic goals of the EU and the US are not the same. The US is ganging up with its allies to safeguard its hegemony. This is not the ambition of the EU. The latter wishes to shape its foreign policy based on its own interest, rather than being forced to take sides in major power competition. This is the main driving force for Macron to stress Europe's strategic autonomy time and again. However, as the Ukraine conflict drags on, Europe is propelled to increase its reliance on the US-led NATO and has to sacrifice its economic interest in exchange for security guarantees. Europe seems to have no alternative but to allow the US to continuously impose the cost of Ukraine-Russia crisis onto itself, and its own strategic autonomy has been greatly jeopardized. In particular, the U.S. is relentlessly provoking the escalation of the Ukraine crisis, which has not only weakened Russia but also strengthened the U.S. control over Europe. This has put Europe in greater economic difficulties as well as on the brink of a more dangerous war. Behind Macron's warning to the U.S., there are not only great worries about the intensification of future crises, but also helplessness that he cannot control the destiny of France, as well as a strong call for Europe to strengthen unity. Of course, France has its own reasons for playing the role as an anti-U.S. fighter. France has a tradition of great power autonomy. It always has a global perspective, the importance of which cannot be overlooked. Former French President Charles de Gaulle had advocated France should adhere to an independent foreign policy and should not be completely constrained by the Western camp led by the U.S. For this reason, France once decided to withdraw from NATO's integrated military command, and it became the first Western major power to establish diplomatic relations with the People's Republic of China. Moreover, France has been an advocate for European integration. The rise of Germany's strength, as well as the European debt crisis, once gave Germany the chance to lead Europe. After former German Chancellor Angela Merkel left politics, it gave France the opportunity to try to dominate European internal and foreign policies. In addition, Macron has his own political needs to take care of. Macron. Macron has regarded the revival of France as his own responsibility, promoting reforms internally and striving for France's status as a great power externally. In this year's presidential election, he was re-elected, but failed to gain an absolute advantage in the parliament. The domestic reform agenda was limited by the obstruction of the opposition. Therefore, Macron needs to make some breakthroughs in European integration and other diplomatic issues in order to strengthen his rule. The contradiction between France and the US, or between Europe and the US, is more of a contradiction in the Western camp and the result of uneven distribution of power and interest. However, France's disappointment toward the US has a limited impact. It will not change the dominant subordinate structure between the US and Europe, nor will it deal a fundamental blow to the hegemonic system of the US. It is impossible for France to give up the institutional dividends of the West either. But Macron's dissatisfaction toward the US will more or less bring some variables to transatlantic relations. For example, when the US-EU Trade Technology Council TTC meeting is held in September, the two sides will find it more difficult to coordinate with each other. In addition, when Europe and the US have a trade conflict in the field of electric vehicles, Germany will definitely stand on the side of France. It means the deepening differences between France and Germany will be breached, and Europe will form a tougher stance towards the US. The issues that seem to be problems only between the US and Europe could also add uncertainties to the current increasingly complex relationship among more major powers. According to Bloomberg, Macron said US trade and energy policies has created a double standard, and Europe was left paying higher prices for its natural gas, according to a report by oilprice.com. The comments from Macron come following 2 weeks of protest staged by workers in French oil refineries Total Energies and ExxonMobil. France was the latest country to withdraw from the Energy Charter Treaty, ECT. It has now switched to being a net importer of energy from once being a net exporter of energy. There are strikes reported at EDF's nuclear reactors as well. Macron is unhappy with the price it is paying for the liquefied natural gas LNG France is importing from the US. It turned to the US for LNG to make up for its declining nuclear fleet and also for the total halt of the Russian energy supplies. Bloomberg added the oilprice.com report revealed that U.S. natural gas exports to France increased 421% during the first 8 months of 2022. But LNG prices are soaring and increased by 1,094% in August alone. In Brussels, Macron said that the North American economy is making choices for the sake of attractiveness, which creates a double standard. He pointed out that at home, the US enjoys low energy prices, but exports energy at higher prices. He also pointed out that state aid for some sectors goes up to 80%, while state aid is prohibited under the Treaty on the Functioning of the EU, TFEU. Macron earlier this week referred to both the US and Norway and said some nations are reaping the real super profits from geopolitical war unearned income. Macron's recent comments also reflect the troubles that are arising between France and the US. The ties are strained over the AUKUS deal, where the US, the UK, and Australia formed a grouping, and the US said it would provide Australia with 8 conventionally armed but nuclear-powered submarines. Australia earlier had a pact with France with respect to nuclear-powered submarines. Macron is expected to visit the United States in December and will take up the subject of energy with his American counterpart, Joe Biden.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The Lebanon's resistance movement, Hezbollah hails as a major victory a recent maritime deal with Israel, while